Jupiter Broadcasting presents this program in stereo. This episode brought to you by GoDaddy.com.
This week on the Linux Action Show, it's our beginner's action guide to Linux. We've collected some of our top audience questions, and we give you the straight answers to your hard-hitting questions. Plus, we've got three wicked Android picks that will empower your handset with super phone-like abilities fueled by our yellow sun. And so much more. Oh, this week on the Linux Action Show. And welcome to Season 13, Episode 6 of the Linux Action Show. My name is Brian. With me is Chris.
Hey there, Brian.
Hi there, Chris.
The Samsung Galaxy Tab runs Linux.
Yeah, it does. And it looks nice, too.
It looks pretty good, doesn't it?
It looks great. It looks like what I'd want a small tablet to look like if the screen weren't only 7 inches in size.
The 7 inches in size, I don't know if it's going to be too bad, because they're still going to be pairing that with a 1024 by 600 display.
That does help. That does help.
And what looks cool about it is it looks like that means you can actually just grip it with a single hand, right?
Ooh,
the iPad's
like
more of like a, you hold it with one hand, but it's just gets a little heavy.
Yeah, yeah.
And
do like the look of this. What I really want, though, is I want a 9-inch version of this.
I could see that.
Or even a 10-inch version of this with even similar resolution.
I think it's likely.
But I'm kind of a unique guy in that regard. I want it for comic book reading. That's what I want it for.
Yeah.
And everything else is almost just secondary for me.
But to be honest with you, I think you're likely going to see that, because it sounds like Samsung's planning to put out a bunch of different SKUs of this unit. This is the first one. Honestly, I'm going to hold my breath. I haven't yet seen Android on a resolution that high, so I don't know how it's going to, I don't know. I'm looking at they're going to ship it with the 1024 by 600, but also it's going to include a gigahertz processor, Android 2.2, and a GSM, a modem in there for 3G, and you're going to have a 4,000 milliamp battery. Now, to give you an example, a 4,000 milliamp, this Evo 4G, my stock is a 1300 or 1400 milliamp.
Okay.
And I think the extended I just put in here is a 2000 milliamp.
Okay, now what does that translate to in terms of hours of actual use time?
So on this guy, I went from I'd say 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. and I need to charge it.
And that's active use?
With probably 11 to 15 phone calls in that period. And then
that's pretty decent.
A lot of text messaging. But now with this new battery, I'm going into the next day, and that's including when I took this down to PAX. By the time I got home, even after a PAX, which is hard on a phone, at a big convention.
PAX is hard on a phone.
Yeah, but down there, I came home with half battery.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that ain't bad.
So
we're looking at something that could have pretty awesome battery life.
Yeah, it's going to have GPS in it too, and it's going to have a front-facing camera, which will be nice.
Man.
So you can do some video chat and stuff like that.
And theoretically, I mean, we've got video chatting on Skype on Android now. It's just it's only available on Verizon.
Yeah.
So theoretically, someday Skype will make that available to everybody, and then we'll all rejoice.
There's also Fring. I think it's called.
Yeah, but what is the deal with? Excuse me, my knee was itching. What is the deal with like companies like Skype? Only releasing an Android app for a specific carrier?
Oh, I know.
I don't know if I understand that.
They cut a deal with Verizon. Did
Verizon like help fund it?
Yeah, Verizon paid them.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Dude,
I know.
That's pretty smart on Verizon's part, but they forced it.
It's not just locked to Verizon. They forced it over Verizon's 3G.
Really? So you can't do Wi-Fi?
They just revved it so it doesn't disable your Wi-Fi while it's running.
But it doesn't run over Wi-Fi?
No.
Why not?
Because they want you to have to pay
Verizon's 3G and use. Mm-hmm. That is so sneaky.
Sucks.
I'm not a big fan of that.
No.
Man, see, this is a good example of why you get one of those little MiFi wireless 3G to Wi-Fi router things, and just keep it in your pocket and turn on all the time so that you get testicular cancer.
Well, I think it's likely
that you always have Wi-Fi.
The new Google Talk stuff or the new Google Voice stuff in Gmail is based off Gizmo, which used SIP. This is the problem with Skype's, and this is a good topic because this is a very noob edition of the Linux Action Show. And we're really going to be covering beginner's basics. And one of the things you'll hear a lot about is open source and open standards and open protocols. Well, SIP is an open protocol for voice communication over the internet. Skype's is a proprietary protocol, which means only Skype has the ownership to that, which means Skype can then exclusively sell rights to Verizon. Whereas the Gizmo project and now the Google Voice technology in Gmail is using SIP, an open source protocol, or at least an open standards protocol. It's likely that somebody could just implement a client for that.
Yeah, and then
Wi-Fi on Android.
Awesome.
Hey, you know what? Speaking of Android, I do have some picks.
What do you got?
Well, why don't we say hello to GoDaddy first?
That's what I was going to do. And then you were like, no.
I know.
No, Brian.
I changed it up.
Let's talk about the Android pick.
Because I realized what
you wanted
to do.
And then you looked at me and you're like, oh, I just screwed with him. Now I'm going to let him do his thing. Okay. All right. Well, you know what? This episode of Linux Action Show is sponsored by GoDaddy.com, the world's largest web hosting domain name registrar. If you're ready to make an impact online, GoDaddy.com has got you covered. Domain names as low as $1.99 plus world class hosting. Unlimited disk space with bandwidth, do-it-yourself website builders, dedicated certificates, servers, SSLs, internets, telephony, not telephony.
Logging.
Logging, Linux, command lines, also servers, much, much more. Plus, a Linux Action Show viewer or listener, enter promo code Linux. That's LINUX. Oh, and save an additional 10% off of your entire order. Or enter Linux 20 and save 20% off dedicated hosting. That's fantastic. I just did that.
I want to say thanks to GoDaddy for sponsoring the show. You know what, actually, too, is they have an advanced DNS manager, which is not too shabby. Our site was down last week. Or wait, yeah, when this comes out, I guess it's technically last week.
It was yesterday.
Yeah. It's confusing on a Sunday, Brian. And you can go in here, and if you have, you could have like a really, really low cost, seriously, like some of these are like $4 a month splash page that you could redirect people to while your site's down.
That's
I was thinking, and I could spin that up off of one of my virtual hosts. We have a GoDaddy.
Instantly, almost.
So I think if we do a server migration or an upgrade, I might actually use something like that with the GoDaddy Advanced DNS Manager and a GoDaddy host to just be like, sorry, Jupyter Broadcasting's down, and maybe with a couple of static links to our latest episodes.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Here's your Android pick.
We talk about some Android picks. I actually have three, but the first main Android pick is the AppBrain Market app.
Nice.
Now, this is a little different than Google's because it works in a more of a recommendation system that kind of pulls from the collective community over at the appbrain.com website. And it's a pretty nice app. And if you pair it with a separate app from them called the Fast Web Installer, you can then use AppBrain's website to, oh, I like this app, click a button, and if you have Fast Web Installer installed on your Android phone, it'll automatically push that application to your Android phone and install it.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. And then one last just kind of bonus pick is you've probably heard a lot about this on the Android phones, or I mean on the iPhone and on the iPad, but Angry Birds is now out on the Android marketplace. And while you'll be able to find the paid version when you search for Angry Birds, I also thought I might link you to a free version just so you can kind of see what all the buzz is about.
Yep.
It's like a, you know, it's a light version, so probably only like one level or two. It looks like a couple levels.
Related note, the Angry Birds game, I believe, was on MAMO first.
No kidding.
Yeah, it was.
It was just ported to the web OS.
Yeah, it was. It was on the N900 in the little Nokia store they had for like ever. Long before I'd ever heard
the chat room's
it on
going,
anything else.
Chat room's with you, dude.
Yeah, I mean, which is pretty cool. Like, it was like the game.
So I'm sure it'll be on Amigo, too.
For the N900 people. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
it's totally rad.
That's cool. All right, Brian, let's get into the noob segment.
Let's do the noobs.
I like that.
Yeah. All right, so as we mentioned earlier, we're going to have a bit of a noob segment here.
Yeah.
We've never really done this before.
No, and part of it is because by the time we started Linux Action Show, we were pretty far down the enthusiast path, and it's kind of hard sometimes for us to remember what some of the early questions were.
It was a long time ago. I mean, when I was a Linux noob, it was Red Hat -4.
Yeah.
And, honestly, back then, Linux sucked pretty bad. I mean, it was, like, it was cool. It was really cool.
It has gotten a lot easier, too.
But it was like KDE, earlier versions of KDE. Yeah. The UI was very much, you know, still trying its best to copy Windows 95.
Yeah.
And, it was just kind of trying to get some of that stuff going. And a lot of stuff really didn't work.
Yeah.
The Office suites weren't really working right.
Oh, man. Before OpenOffice, before Sun had took StarOffice and open sourced it, we had really nothing.
Dude, what we had was AbbeyWord.
Yeah.
So AbbeyWord, and at that point, AbbeyWord was not good.
Right.
Like AbbeyWord was a little janky itself. And so, you know, we were left adrift. So it forced users back then to become pro users, even if they weren't ready for it.
Yeah, you had to. You had to do the research and all that stuff.
You had to go all out.
You know, and I think we've gotten. I've seen an uptick in the amount of questions we've gotten about some of the newcomers to Linux. And I think. I think some of the other shows on Jupiter Broadcasting, people are like, oh, I like that show. I'll watch the Linux Action Show just to give it a shot. And they're like, oh, this is interesting, but I don't know what they're talking about. I've been hearing that more and more.
So here we go. We got a big list of questions here. Now, if you're a pro user, you're going to go, oh, my God, what are they asking us? And they're going to roll your eyes. But just bear with us for a
minute. Yeah, and you know what? Maybe we should say up front, if you're a pro user and if we stumble over a question that you just, I think our answer is atrocious, head over to jupitercolony.com and go into the Linux Action Show segment, and there's a thread in there for this episode, and I'm going to ask that if you're a new user and you want to absorb some Linux information, go there.
And ask questions. Feel free. I mean, one of the best things about using Linux is the community. Not just the community, the many communities. Mm-hmm. And if you have a particular style, a particular taste, a way you like to communicate, there will be a community for you.
Yeah, you do have to kind of maybe hone in on the culture of some of the communities. Like, there's some forums where you'll go and you'll find that they don't necessarily respond well to your questions. And sometimes that's because you have to follow some etiquette. It's a community and a culture. Really is that. It's kind of like going into a clubhouse.
You can't just wander through the front door and start going, where's the bathroom? Where's the bathroom?
Yeah.
You have to buy a drink.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to say,
participate.
Oh, hey, everybody. Oh, there's the dance floor. That's nice. Oh, bathrooms are in the back? Right. Yeah. Okay. There we go.
Yeah.
And then everyone thinks you're awesome.
And check to make sure, like, a lot of times you'll get instantly people mad at you if you ask a question and there's like there's already a thread that has asked that question with answers.
Yeah, searching in the forums is big. Otherwise, you're going to get people all cranky. Yeah. Some people will be a little cooler about it, but just
like,
be aware.
Like Jupiter Colony, we're pretty cool about that.
We're not going to jump all over you.
No.
We're awesome.
All right, so let's jump into some of the more common questions we've gotten. This is a combination of some awesome questions from our live chat room. We do the Linux Action Show live over at jupiterbroadcasting.com/live, 10 a.m. Pacific. That's right now.
Right now.
GMT-8.
-8:30
on Sundays.
No.
Well, we do
it. -8.
-8.
It's 10:30 right now.
At 10 a.m. we do the show live, though.
Gosh, math is hard.
I know. You've got PAX brain.
Have PAX brain.
We're doing a shorter episode this week because it's a PAX weekend for us.
So it's 10:30 in the morning. I was out until about 2:30 last night, rocking it out at the Penny Arcade Expo down in Seattle, and by which. Has nothing to do with Linux. There's no Linux related anything.
We really searched video games high and low to try to get some really good nuggets for the Linux Action.
There's
show.
A couple of games that run on Linux.
Yeah, and
I've got review copies coming.
And there's a couple of games that are based off open source engines.
Yep,
but they don't really talk about that.
And there's at least one or two games. One I'm thinking of that has the same name as an open source game. So.
Next US.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah. Once we're going to actually go down and get a demonstration of it later today.
No. We're going to a party.
Oh, it's a party.
It's a party, dude.
That's awesome.
It's an after party. The Next US guys are throwing an after party.
And Linux Action Show is going to be there.
Oh, yeah. And we will represent Worry You Not. All right, so let's get into these questions.
Okay. So the first one,
we got a stack of books here.
Yeah.
I should.
Do you want to comment on books versus like research? Because I got a couple of different angles. I got do's and don'ts with books.
You know,
You're not a book guy?
Oh, here's the thing. I'm a bookie. I like books. I like paper. I e-books are great. I read a ton, but I prefer physical books. I like to read through them for tunes and manuals.
Yeah.
I have shelves upon shelves of programming books and nerd books at home. I've read about a tiny fraction of them. I skim a few of them and everything like that. But here's the thing.
We got five books here I've probably read 100 pages out of
them. When you're picking up a new operating system and you're really genuinely confused, maybe this isn't a bad way to go. But really, you're just going to read through the first couple chapters, and then from there, you're going to go off on your own merry way, and you're going to ask questions in forums, and you're going to search around on
it's
going to
get
the
your
Googles
brain sparked.
And the Bings and the whatnots,
I would
and that's
say
all
this.
You need.
I would say books like Things for Certifications, not a bad way to go, like Linux Plus here, and books about Linux or components of Linux, like a Samba book.
That's not bad.
They're not bad. I would say books about a specific distribution, like this Ubuntu book I have here, this isn't a good way to go.
No.
Because anything that's here's a perfect example. This book is based on Ubuntu 6.10. right? Yeah. Well, we're on 9.10 now.
And it's so unrelevant now.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, if you look at the screenshots, you just go, yep. That is a totally different operating system with different features.
Now, whereas the Samba book still has a lot of, so much so that I've bookmarked a couple of pages for like domain management and stuff like that.
It's still relevant.
There's still a lot more, that's when we went and saw Superman Returns at the IMAX in 3D. Remember that?
Dude, that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was a long time ago, 2006.
Holy moly.
So that's, I'm just going to, let's just start there with books.
So that was the last time you cracked that one open.
I guess so, yeah.
So books are interesting, but come on, go online. It's the easier way to go.
Before we jump into it, open source.
Okay.
What is open source? Now, Brian, why don't you take that one, being a developer yourself?
Open source is the source being open.
Yeah, meaning you can look at
you
it.
You can get it.
And there's different ways it could be licensed.
There's a million different ways it could be licensed.
Open source doesn't necessarily mean you can do anything you want with it in any way.
No, but having the source available gives you more freedom and more flexibility. And that flexibility may simply be that your IT department can audit the source code for a project for potential security flaws. And that
Which
may
is
be all
handy.
That you can do. But
it's very good.
Having the source code available is kind of an underlying root of Linux, in that the Linux kernel itself is released under the GPL license, which is kind of one of the most pervasive of all the open source licenses, and therefore most of the Linux projects are actually based on that license as well. In fact, the Free Software Foundation likes to lay claim that most of the OS that's out there is really, really theirs, because it's all GNU'd utilities and GPL'd projects, and they originated that, so it's really GNU/Linux as an operating system,
right?
Which is whiny. It's very whiny of them.
Now it's
that's just an overview.
In the grand scope of things, it does mean that everything from the actual nuts and bolts of the operating system, the really core level stuff that involves like interacting with your hardware devices, all the way up to your text editor, if you were so inclined, you could look at the source code. And if you're a noob, like, that's not always that great of a sell, unless maybe you want to learn a little bit of programming.
Right.
You almost essentially have your entire operating system as a guide.
Right. It's kind of handy.
That's pretty neat.
I mean, that's just very, very cool.
Now, should we move on to, so why is Linux, how can it possibly be free? If it's free, it must be ass.
It's not free. See, that's the thing. There's no such thing as a free lunch. If you grab a copy of Ubuntu, it doesn't cost you anything. It costs other people some things. There's actually a large company, Canonical, behind Ubuntu that invests a lot of money into just simply putting it together. And here's the thing.
Some projects, like Debian, don't have necessarily one commercial entity behind them. People might be employed.
They have mega numbers of commercial entities.
Right. But it's not like, where some distributions like Ubuntu are owned solely by Canonical.
Right.
And some distributions like Debian are
community-driven projects.
But those people in the community may be hired by IBM, by Intel.
Right.
All these different people, they're paying their paychecks.
And part of their job is to either half-time, full-time, part-time, what have you, to maintain a package or a specific set of packages for that project.
For example, Dell works a lot with the Linux kernel on a lot of the block device drivers. That's your hard drives and networking storage and things like that, because it's in Dell's best interest that Linux run really great on their server. Pay somebody to do that stuff full time.
Yep. And Novell hires a lot of people to work on a lot of different technologies, because those are the technologies that they need to bundle into their enterprise desktop Linux offerings, which they sell, because there's a lot of extra on services that come on top of that.
Yep.
So Linux isn't really free. It just doesn't cost any money to you, for the most part, to go grab and use it.
Yeah, and there are always pay options, but for the most part, that's how it works out. And that does mean really good things for the end user. It means for us,
it's
the cost
cheaper.
Other than our time.
Here's the great thing about it. Even though, obviously, the companies are paying for it in a certain way, it means that it's free enough for you that you can bounce between different versions of Linux and try them all out however you want.
Yeah, think about this. If there was genuine application differences between Windows 7 Home, Windows 7 Enterprise, and Windows 7...
You'd have
whatever.
To buy all three of them just to see what the differences are and see if you like
but
one of them.
But if OpenSUSE is doing something different than Fedora and Fedora is doing something different than Mandriva, you just jump around.
Yeah.
Jump around.
Just try it out. And heck, with virtualization now, with VirtualBox and VMware Player and all these other free virtualization tools, and the fact that you can grab pre-made virtualized images of them. Mm-hmm. Just download them. You don't even have to install them. You just download file, run it. You're like, I don't like that OS. To the trash, and you move right on.
I want to talk about...
to the trash OSs so often.
That is nice. Oh, this one's garbage.
Don't remove, like this release at all.
Remove, include disks with removal.
Yeah. Fedora down.
No, come on now.
It was just an example.
Hey, did you see the Fedora Project's redoing their website, speaking of that?
I did.
Now, I want to talk about something that we get a ton of confusion on. Like, people are... And this is one of the things that, honestly, is a damn shame. Root.
Okay.
Root can mean a couple of different things. Root can be a user account.
Yep.
Root can also be the top of a file system.
Right.
And you hear often the term thrown around, don't run as root.
Right.
Are they talking about the file system or are they talking about the user? That's probably a common question that I've gotten on YouTube like a jillion times. And I would say they're two different things. Prepare yourself for this. So root is the number zero user. It is the main user in your system. It can do everything. It can literally delete the file system while your operating system is running.
Yeah, it's a great user in that regard.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. So people say don't run as root. I always run
as root. Do you really always run as root?
Hell yes. You know why I run as root?
Why?
Awesome. Here, I live on the edge. I'm like Mad Max.
Do you really always run as root for real?
Computer. No, I don't run as root. Are you kidding me? That's asinine. I would love to think that I am so hardcore that I just always run as root. I just caution to the wind. Screw it. Let's just Thunderdome this bitch and see what happens. But no, never run as root. Never ever do that. When you run as the only times you run as root is you run as root temporarily.
Yeah.
You sudo.
You need to do something.
And basically what sudo is just what it sounds like. You basically pretend to be someone else for a little while. Mm-hmm. You say, system, I'm totally root. I'm not joshing with you. No, me, user 2765.
I'm totally okay to do this.
I'm root. I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
So you sudo, which, by the way, is spelled wrong. It's S-U-D-O in the system. I don't know why. I don't. Do you know why?
Well, I think it was...
Instead of P-S-E-U-D-O.
Because originally, and still some districts do this, you would just do S-U.
Right.
So SU would just convert you up to root.
That's super user.
Yeah, it would escalate you up to root.
Now, is sudo super user do?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. There you go. You put it together.
Oh.
And it's neat.
Let's figure that out.
Sudo's a good way to do it.
I always assumed sudo, since it was sudo, meant as in.
If you're familiar with Vista or Windows 7, when you get that UAC prompt, that boop, are you sure you would like to do this?
Chat room saying no, it's not super user do, it's switch user do. That's true, because you can sudo into any user. So you basically.
Oh, right, you can.
S-U-D-O.
You can SU to any user too, though.
Do your user name and then. Run your
so that UAC prompt in Windows 7 and Vista is sort of an equivalent of a sudo.
It's sudo root. It's sudo root. Do you want to repeatedly just copy a file?
Now, why you don't want to run as root is you could accidentally do something.
I love the chat room. We go around here being retarded, and they're like, guys, we love you and everything, but a giant page of you're wrong.
You know,
awesome.
I'll tell you, I just remembered this. I literally... deleted my file system as an early Linux noob, like Red Hat 6 days. I actually was always running as root, and they didn't really push it as a big of a deal back then.
Yeah.
And I actually, while the system is running, deleted my file system. Interesting, does not go as dramatically bad as you might think. Because of the memory caching in Linux, and the kernel loaded all of the drivers into memory, and all of the user applications, I had errors. Like if I didn't have my file manager open, I went to double-click on my file manager to say, did I actually really just delete my directory, my file manager wouldn't load, or ls wouldn't execute. But anything that was actually already running still ran fine. So don't run as root, because you might do something like that. But also these days, kids, there's a lot of baddies on the internet, and whatever you download on the internet is going to run at whatever user level you're running at. So if you're running as root, that bad malware, that bad script will also be running as root.
It can touch your whole system.
Now, obviously, not as big of a deal on Linux.
No.
But it's something to think of, because it could always happen.
Absolutely. So just don't run as root. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't Mad Max it. Don't do what Brian was saying earlier. Don't Thunderdome that.
Don't run with root.
Don't run with root unless you're like using a tutorial from like our website or Ubuntu.com's forum or something that says in order to install this, you got to sudo.
Yeah, for privileges. Now,
right.
Last week we covered the news story that the Grub2 bootloader was getting nuked by some Windows DRM applications and things like that.
Yep.
Well, that prompted the question, what's a bootloader?
What's a bootloader? Please. Well, all right, so a bootloader is something that you never should we ever have to see or deal with. A bootloader tells...
About to use his grub.
So your system starts out. Your system gets kickstarted, right? Your hard drive spin up. Your BIOS posts its little doohickey. By that, it goes beep. Yep. And you move on. Well, what happens? How does your system know what to do then? So it starts booting.
And it can only execute a very small amount of code.
A very small amount. So what happens is basically it checks the whatever the boot device is. Let's say it's your hard drive at this point.
Right.
Basically hits that and says, okay, go hard drive, go. And, well, of course, it can't just say, oh, hey, hard drive. Well, I just magically know that you want to load Linux off of the third partition over here. So just go and do that real quick.
Yeah.
No, it's just going to say, go, blast it. And then this new piece of software will boot up, which is in and of itself kind of like an operating system.
A mini.
It's a little mini drivers, operating
like
system.
For your file system and stuff like that.
And it knows via configuration files what OSs you've got, where they're at on your hard drive or your many hard drives or what have you, and how to launch them. And then it either auto-launches them or lets you, through a menu, select them. And that's what grub is.
So I was just checking
Windows
this.
Windows has the same thing, except you don't really see it very much.
NT bootloader.
Yeah.
And you've probably seen the boot ini and things like that. Now, another one that's not nearly as popular, but I was just checking this old Linux Plus book here. This is one of the things that you have to be careful with books. This is a little bit older of one, but you do want to watch out for this. Is this one talks about Lilo, which is an old older Linux bootloader.
Kinda
some still like
Lilo.
It. Yeah, it had some nice advantages. So Lilo is another example of something that's just a little tiny bit of code that then launches the operating system. So that's what a bootloader is, and that's why a bootloader has to be uploaded if you upgrade your kernel.
Updated, yeah.
Yeah, because the bootloader needs to know which kernel to go execute for you now.
Right. So that's why when a little app screws with it, it kind of pisses you off a little bit.
Lilo is still in development. DLP 2.11 points out in the chat room. It's still actively used by a lot of different... and also...
Well, this actually is more telling than that. The specific quote is, Lilo is still in development, or so I have heard.
Oh, yeah. No, it is. Lilo is big on hardware devices.
Yeah,
like little firewalls and stuff like that, or those like your Wi-Fi routers that run Linux. A lot of them will use Lilo to execute their little boot environment.
But you know, for the most part, desktop Linux users aren't using that anymore. They've moved on.
Yeah, and there are a lot of times when you're installing, you'll get prompted if you should install to a partition or an MBR. You know, to be honest with you, I'm not really sure. I've had the least amount of problems with MBR installations. It just seems to be what the hardware and the other operating systems expect to have happen. Now we're going to kind of move on, kind of get into the bigger Linux stuff, and then we're going to have a couple of do's and don'ts, and I think we'll probably leave it towards that.
Okay.
I wanted to talk about what's the difference between an open source driver and a manufacturer's closed source driver.
Basically exactly what it sounds like. You know, a closed source driver is a driver made by the manufacturer. So if NVIDIA comes out with a video card driver and they say, here you go, here's a video card driver. Great. It may work awesome, but it's only going to work awesome on the systems that they tested it on and the systems that they support.
And so, the distributions. And usually the licensing around that driver doesn't permit that it can be just automatically included with the distribution.
And here is part of the big problem. On the Linux side of things, drivers are not exactly cut and dry simple. In order to get some drivers functioning, you actually have to compile it into the kernel.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an issue. So which means, if you think about this for a second, that means that a specific version of a driver will oftentimes only work on a specific version of a kernel. So
you update your kernel for like a security patch, something
you go
like
to
that.
A new version of SUSE or Ubuntu. You're not going to a new version of Fedora, obviously, because you're not using that anymore. But if you go to a new version of one of the other systems that people are using,
you are so mean to them, dude.
You're going to get a new version of the kernel, and it may not break. It may work great. You may just have to reinstall it. You may have to rerun an installer or repatch. But the chance of it breaking is much higher. Now, if it's open source, what that basically means is the community can maintain it. So theoretically, whoever's maintaining your repositories of software can keep that version of the driver up to date.
And generally, an open source driver can be included in the kernel so that the Linux kernel can automatically load it for you. There's sometimes, depending on how they had to develop the open source driver, in some cases it has complete and total, and even in some other cases, better support for the hardware device than the manufacturer's driver, if they had a legitimate hardware spec to follow.
Right.
If they have to reverse engineer it, often in the case with like Wi-Fi drivers or video card drivers, there's sometimes some functionality that doesn't quite yet live up to expectations, like 3D acceleration, things like that.
For a long time, in order to get great 3D acceleration, you ended up having to use the closed source video drivers. Yeah. I mean, that has changed a lot in the last year or so.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still kind of
up
in the air
sometimes.
So I would
say for like video and things like that, if your primary objective is gaming and 3D acceleration,
you're going to want the closed source drivers.
And if, but if you just want, you know,
it's sad, but it's true.
If you want an easy to maintain, easy to update, and probably have basic good compiz support for 3D accelerated window effects, your open source driver is probably going to get the job done. And if nothing else, try it and then uninstall it. In fact, why don't we go from, while we're talking about installing and uninstalling, should we talk about what a package manager is and all that stuff? Because if you're coming from Windows, you just download a setup.exe and run it.
And honestly, this is one of the coolest parts about moving to Linux over being on Windows or OS X. If you want to grab a piece of software in Windows or OS X, you go to someone's website, you download it, and you either run an installer or on a Mac, you drag an application icon from a mounted disk image to a specific folder that Apple never tells you exactly where it's at and is actually kind of hard to find despite being fairly commonly named. Basically, Mac OS X is the stupidest user interface on the entire freaking planet for installing a new application. What was I talking about? Apple sucks. All right, so but what's really cool is if you have, on the Linux side of things, we have repositories. Yeah. And we have packages. What a package is literally, think of it like an installer for your software.
Like an instruction list with all the things it needs.
Right.
Like a grocery shopping list.
It's like a headless installer. So it's an installer that can run itself once you tell it to run.
It's one unified software package that controls all of the installing for your entire system. So you don't have setup.exes and the Windows MSI files for every single program. No, you have one big program.
And here's the great thing about them. The individual packages have references to what software they need to run. Mm-hmm. So if you've ever tried to install, let's say, a video editing tool under Windows, and you started to install Adobe Premiere or something, you're like, you get through it and you run it and it doesn't quite work right. Oh, you have to install Apple QuickTime. Mm-hmm. Oh, you got to install these other codecs. You don't necessarily know that until you start trolling through the documentation, is it doesn't do it for you automatically. Yeah. Or if you've ever installed stuff on Windows where an installer launches an installer, an installer.
Pigeon is a good example of that.
It's a nightmare. On the Linux side, it's just like, oh, you need these 12 other applications. Do you want to just install them all at the same time?
So I can just go get them right off the FTP site. It's no problem for me. I'll just get them for you.
You don't even have to download them. I'll download them for you.
Yeah.
Do it right now.
I'll log it to your database for you, too, while I'm at it. So that way you have a record there installed for
you. It's just super, super handy.
Yeah.
So that's what the packages are. The repositories literally is just, it is an FTP site, but it is a web server sitting out
there
somewhere.
It's an index. It's a site with an index file on it, and different distributions do this differently, and different distributions have different things in the repository.
But it's just a collection of software.
It's generally everything from the actual core files on your operating system, like your file manager and your login screen and all that kind of stuff,
to versions of Firefox and OpenOffice and everything.
And a lot of distributions don't ship with things like audio codecs for MP3 files or video codecs.
But they're in there.
They're often in the repo.
So what's great is all of the different distros provide some way of either graphically or via the command line searching the repository to find what you want. And you can, of course, search by the name of the packages or just search by what you're looking for, MP3 codec. And usually most of those distros will have default repositories where that'll be in the description. It'll give you a couple of options. You just click the one you want.
Yep.
Boom.
And then it keeps track of when there's an update available. So anything you've installed down the road, that same package manager will notify you when there's an update. And it's not just always security updates. There's sometimes new versions published in there, bug fixes, all kinds of stuff.
All sorts of stuff.
So you don't have to go out to the manufacturer. You don't have to go to Mozilla.org to download the latest Firefox. It just will automatically.
You get the latest and greatest whenever you want it. It's awesome.
Well, once the distro puts it in their repo, but they're generally on top of that.
And here's the great thing. You don't have to wait for the distro. Let's say you're, you know, newbie. You're noob Ubuntu user, and all the other Linux users are making fun of you. Like, you're noob Ubuntu user.
Noob.
I've moved on. I'm using Kubuntu 10.10.
I got Subuntu. I like its low memory footprint.
Yeah, I like XDE mostly because it only has 300 megabytes of RAM.
I don't have a ton of money, so I only have 64 megabytes of RAM.
Who the hell are you making fun of right now?
I don't know, dude. I don't know.
Because I honestly don't know anyone.
No.
I think what we were doing is we were like channeling Bill Murray making fun of nerds.
Yeah, and then like taking the most stereotypical things we could think of and just smashing it all together.
It didn't even make sense. All right. So, you know, if you move beyond and you want to, that kind of newbie, you know, just getting your feet wet stage.
I like that the chat room points out that we were being superior, like we've moved on to other things that we actually don't move on because we're still talking about, we actually use the, like Ubuntu and stuff, we don't use Kubuntu. So we've moved on to these other things. We actually have not moved on in real life. Like, our smug attitudes are totally false.
I've got an OpenSUSE machine.
OpenSUSE, sure.
Oh yeah.
So
you can actually add in your own repositories. There's lots of community maintained repositories. You can build your own repositories.
That's a cool thing.
You can have all sorts of cool stuff set up that way. It's very handy. Lots of flexibility.
I'd like to talk about Linux, and I'm going to let's peel this one last big topic off, and then we're going to talk about some places you can find help and some do's and don'ts. Ubuntu, and that's a big problem, actually, is a lot of people just refer to Linux as Ubuntu or Fedora now, if that's the only they're familiar with, so you got to watch for that. There is no, there isn't Ubuntu-specific Linux. Ubuntu or Fedora are repackagings of the core Linux files, like the kernel, the GNU tools, and then they repackage that with all the different applications. They brand it, they tweak it, and then they deliver it as their distribution, as Ubuntu, or as Fedora, or as OpenSUSE, etc. Now, Linux is two beasts, really. There's a command line text version of Linux that you could live in your entire life if you didn't need graphical stuff, like a server. And then there's the graphical stuff that sits on top of that. And you have a window manager that lives in there, and you have a desktop environment that lives in there. So you have things like X11. That's your window manager. And that is what actually will display the graphical things on your screen. That's what communicates from what you want to actually run and what actually gets drawn through the video card to your monitor. Does that sound like that makes sense?
That's it.
You following me so
far? Yeah, I'm with you.
And then inside this X11 window manager.
Okay, wait. X11 isn't really a window manager.
No, okay. It's a display manager, right?
Kind of.
So this is a really complicated thing to display. I'm trying to explain it in a way that people won't get totally lost. I don't know how to say it.
Newbie, thousand foot view. Linux by itself, let's say you just get Linux with all of the GNU tools. What you have is a command line system.
Right.
It's like DOS. If you came from DOS world, it's like DOS.
It's like DOS.
Okay. You want to use your mouse, and you want to have a higher resolution with
and all the distros ship with
icons and menus. What you get is X11.
And you don't really have to worry about this too much anymore. All the distros ship with the graphical on, but it's good to know the history of the beast in a way.
Now let's say now that you've got the ability to use your mouse, you want a little more functionality. You want fancy icons on your desktop and cool menus. Now you want to use things like GNOME and KDE to provide that extended functionality.
Yep, and so that's kind of where they'll sit on top of X11, and they'll use X11 to display what they want to show you. And GNOME might be something that you're familiar with, or KDE might be something you're familiar with. Those are the big ones. There's a lot of other ones out there for Linux. A
lot of other ones.
And they use different software toolkits to be built, KDE and GNOME, because we're going to talk about the two big ones, really.
Yeah.
And so you'll also hear that thrown around. There's Qt and there's GTK. So this is an extremely hard area for new Linux users to understand, because this whole graphical environment is a lot of terms. It's X11, it's GTK, it's Window Manager, it's Display Manager.
The reality, though,
you don't really need to worry about it too often.
You don't need to worry about it that often. Can we throw this up at all? Is this something we can throw up?
Do Control Plus on that. On like that, yeah.
Whoop, there we go.
There you go.
All right. So what we've got here is, whoops, too far, zooming back.
Almost. There you go. You like that?
Oh, you undid it.
There you go.
We'll just leave it on there. Okay. All right. So what we've got here is actually a chart. This is mapping actual usage of GNOME versus KDE. So realistically, if you are a new user, those are your two options. Those are the two options you're probably going to use.
Yeah.
So what you've got here is most people are using GNOME by a long shot. Over 60% of all Linux users are using GNOME as their way to work with Linux. And a little bit less than 30% are using KDE. And then, you know, there's a bunch of other ones. You see this yellow line there. That's a whole bunch of other ones. But it's just, you know, it's just other ones. The reality is, if you're trying to get into Linux, you're trying to learn it, you're going to learn it on Ubuntu, here you go. There's a... right there, boom. That's Ubuntu user share. So what you've got up there is that blue line. This blue line is Ubuntu usage. This actually trends to almost 50% of all Linux users
Where's that from? Is that based on Ubuntu?
This is using a combination of DistroWatch and Google Search Trends.
Yeah, that's right. And web traffic, right?
Yep. And the website analytics stuff. So you notice that green line up there is Debian.
Mm.
Ubuntu is based on Debian, so actually it's... So Ubuntu is part of that green line. So most Debian
Ubuntu. Yeah.
Ubuntu essentially makes up everything. I mean, it is half of the Linux world.
So and if since you go Ubuntu out there, ships with GNOME.
And if Ubuntu ships with GNOME by default, so therefore those are the two places you're going to start.
Mm-hmm.
That's, unless you have friends that are like OpenSUSE KDE guys that you can go to for help, you're going to start with Ubuntu and GNOME.
And a lot of the and that's just the facts. And
that's
so
okay.
Don't get
There's
so
nothing wrong with that.
Don't get so worked up in the fact that you don't fully understand how all of the different display managers and everything work. I realize a lot of you have felt it's been an area that a lot of you have asked for clarification for.
Yeah.
And really, honestly, you can just hear as we walk through this beast that is X11 and the way it interacts with the different desktop environments, it really just gets to a point where you look at this and go, oh, man, this is so screwed up. I just don't see Linux still using this in 5 years. To be honest with you, in my opinion, the whole X11 environment and all that stuff is one of Linux's weaker areas.
Perhaps,
it's our soft spot.
Perhaps, but a new user doesn't have to worry about it.
Exactly.
You don't ever have to even think about it. You don't have to know it exists. You can ignore it entirely.
There go the books.
The books are gone.
I say throw out the, you know, unless you're, I don't know, just throw them out.
Beginning SUSE book.
Yeah,
I'll keep that one.
That's
nice.
Keep that around. Yeah. It features SUSE Linux 10.
That's right.
I don't know when this guy came out.
A while ago.
And a lot of
I
these.
I think 3 years ago.
This
man.
One, which was cool, this one shipped with an actual SUSE CD.
Yeah.
So I got the
That's
distro
what I'm
on that
talking
one.
About.
All right, Brian. Now, a couple of quick places on where to get help. You know, a lot of nerds that are into Linux like to hang out in IRC.
They really do. And if you've never really hung out in IRC, or you did 15 years ago, it's still around. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
So IRC is great. There's an IRC server called Freenode. It's just freenode.net, actually irc.freenode.net. Go download an IRC client. If you've got Pigeon, you've already got an IRC client.
Yeah.
You've got Empathy, you've got an IRC client.
I like XChat.
Yeah, there's lots of IRC clients. If you have Linux up and running, just type IRC into whatever software installation system there is, whether it's the App Center or Synaptic or whatnot, and you'll find plenty. You choose your own, rock and roll with
yeah.
it. Now, IRC is not a very reliable way to get help, but it's a way to connect directly with a lot of people that are actively using
Linux. Or if you're struggling, like and almost every open source project out there uses IRC.
Yeah.
And especially the big ones like the distros and stuff like that. And if you go in there, you'll find somebody who can point you in the right direction where to get help.
They'll give
you a link to a wiki article or their forms and stuff like that. So if you've been doing your Google foo and you're just not ninjing it up today for whatever reason with your Google searches, they can probably point you in the right direction.
And if you're going to hop into a forum, I recommend hopping into the forums either one of two places. Hop into jupitercolony.com.
Yeah.
One, because we're Linux distro agnostic.
Mm.
The people in the Jupiter Colony are nice. They're cool people.
True.
You know, hey, they'll listen to this show.
Yeah.
They're cool people.
Sure.
And they're generally nice, and they'll kind of help you out no matter what you're trying to run. The other thing is, if you're running a particular distro, if you're running Ubuntu, go to the official Ubuntu forums.
Yeah, yeah.
Do not get caught going to, you know, random Jimmy Bob's tech forum.org or something like that, because you're going to get a bunch of people who are going to be a little more elitist,
yeah,
a little bit more cranky, and a little less helpful. But if you go to the official forums, Ubuntu's or SUSE's, obviously not Red Hat's, but the other ones, you're going to get really good help.
Now, I want to give a couple of do's and don'ts.
I like that you didn't even balk at my obviously not Red Hat that time.
No, I'm just
going
with
it.
You're
just used to it.
I'm just figuring.
Oh, this is what we do.
I figure it's now the show.
We do this now.
I don't know if I agree with it. I just want to go on the record. But
you notice, I wasn't doing it last episode.
Yeah.
I'm probably not going to next. But
yeah.
This one, I would
I'm
like
rolling.
To be known
I'm
as the anti-Fedora episode.
I think it's just whenever you're sleepy, to be honest with you.
Is that it?
Yeah.
When I get sleepy, I'm like, man, I hate Fedora.
Yeah.
Man, Fedora made me tired today.
Yep.
You know, the thing is, I haven't used Fedora in a while.
Yeah.
Your phone is ringing.
Yeah.
Your Google Android buzzing over there.
Yeah, my clients, you know how
you know,
it goes.
You know what some people do?
Hmm.
They put their phone into like an off mode or like a not ringy dingy mode.
You know, to be honest with you.
Prior to doing a show.
I thought
who's going to call you?
Who in their right mind would call me on a Sunday morning at 10 a.m.? You know, who would what kind of asshole would do that?
You just found out.
I just found out. Yeah.
Oh, good.
One thing I want to mention is don't switch over to Linux if there's something you really, really, really need that's Windows-based for your day job.
Yeah.
Like QuickBooks. You can get QuickBooks to run under Wine and also fairly easy using a product called Crossover. But you're probably not really comfortable doing that kind of stuff yet.
And to be honest, it's not going to run as well.
And
I mean,
there's alternatives like K-Money, and there's also the online site versions.
But if you've got, you know, 3 years of data in QuickBooks, getting it out of that and into some other format is not going to be an easy chore. Luckily,
just VirtualBox.
If you're not, you can virtualize
it.
A Windows.
If
OS.
You know how to do that,
but at that point, you're really making sacrifices.
If you want to get your toe wet with Linux, maybe you should do the reverse. Maybe do VirtualBox under Windows for a little while to kind of see what works for you,
and slowly transition over to using it more and more and more. Yeah. A lot of people I know started out with having a dual boot system where they have Windows for their for their day job and maybe for some games. And then they had Linux for everything else. And then slowly they got all their games working under Linux.
I'll tell you
one
thing.
They booted back into Windows less and less.
One thing you want to watch out for is the trap of, I just need to get this done. It's not working under Linux. Screw it. I'm going to reboot and go into Windows and get it done.
Yeah.
And then come back into Linux. Because what you'll find is you start saying to yourself, well, why do I really need to bother rebooting back into Linux? I'll just stay here where it works. So spend the time to work through the problem if you can. Or do something like maybe like your laptop. Is your news, internet, just basic email, chat, online games, stuff like that.
Get your stuff working.
And get that under Linux, and then keep your desktop Windows for a little while.
You know what's amazing is a lot of things, like let's say you want to get QuickBooks running under Linux. Well, it's a Windows app. At first, if you've never done this before, that seems daunting as hell. You're like, well, how the hell am I going to get this working? Yeah. And then you're like, oh, okay, you've heard about Wine. You've heard that Wine allows you to run Windows apps under Linux. So you go to their website. Doesn't really help you much.
No.
You look at it and you just glaze over.
So don't bet the farm on Wine.
Don't bet the farm on Wine. But what I'm saying is, it's actually not that hard.
You can make it work.
Ask a few questions.
And apps like Crossover.
Maybe a half hour, 45 minutes of work, you'll be up and running. You'll be rocking with your Windows apps under Linux. It's just, it takes a little bit. There is a hump to get over. Once you get over the hump, Your hump over.
Looks like Wine Doors is down. Wine Doors was a nice way to
go. Wine Doors was a nice way to go. It's up and down.
Check out Crossover Office. It's a good way to go, too.
Yeah, it's
just
a great way. Plus, they have good support. So if you have issues, you can contact the Crossover Office people, and they'll help you
out. They have an honest rating of how an application works, and they have a known good database that comes with their application, so you can literally say, okay, I want to install Office 2007, and it'll say, all right. Stick the disk in or point me to a setup file, and then it just runs through this installer for you.
Yeah, it's really a great product.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Brian, did you have anything else you want to throw out there for the news?
No, I think that's good. You know, I mean, obviously we're not going to do a noob episode all the time.
Yeah.
Because we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. There's a lot of Linux stuff happening in the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this was good. Hopefully this was helpful to everybody.
Yeah, I hope so.
Because, hey, if nothing else, we kept them from running Fedora. So...
Or they're going to go check it out. What is he talking about? Fedora's download numbers probably go up every time we mention them.
Probably triple.
Now,
I don't think anyone uses it anymore.
If you have any noob questions or any noob suggestions, head over to jupitercolony.com or also just any general feedback for the Linux Action Show. Jupitercolony.com is the place to do that.
It's beautiful.
There you have it. All right. Oh, also, we've been doing these shows live, like I mentioned earlier in the show, and you can find out when we are actually going live or maybe even what the topic's going to be about. Head over to facebook.com/JupiterBroadcasting. There you have it, everyone. Well, Brian, I think that's everything we have for this week's episode.
Are we just done?
I think so.
We don't even need to have a cap and then an outro or anything.
I don't think so, because it's kind of been a one-off.
I love it.
I like it, too. I like it when we change it up every now
and then. Dude, this is crazy.
You never know.
This really feels fresh and exciting.
We have a recipe for the show, but every now and then we break that mold.
We did, didn't we?
We did.
We just took that mold and we shattered it on the floor. Then we went out and we bought a new mold that's in the shape of that's in the shape of Optimus Prime.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make a Jell-O.
Ooh.
Like Optimus Prime.
I like tasty Optimus.
It's going to be in Optimus Prime colors. It's not going to be perfect.
You can't really.
But it's going to be close.
If you could just get the sections right.
It's
going to
be recognizable.
Yeah. You can eat the head first.
What are we talking about?
Optimus Prime.
Nice.
I know. Oh, yeah.
Later, everybody. All right. We will see you next week.